To all the ladies in the place with under some pressure, hit and step by Gilbert Brown. Who rock grooves and make moves with all the mommies. The back.
The old Gravedigger.
The back of the club, Mackin' Hall, my crew's behind me.
I mean, this guy was 345 pounds, and when you have a nickname like the Gravedigger, you're God.
And now, presented by Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall in beautiful Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Packer Report podcast with Gilbert Brown. Here's your host, publisher of the Packer Report, Ross Uglum.
No need to be greedy. I got mad friends with Benzes. See notes by the layers. True to life players. Jump in the Rover and come over. Tell your friends. Jump in the GF3. I got the and out by the tree. I love it when you call me Big Pop. Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player.
What's up, Packers fans? We are back with another edition of the Packer Report podcast with Gilbert Brown, brought to you by Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall in beautiful Green Bay, Wisconsin. It is it's a Victory Tuesday because, Gilbert, you had something going on yesterday.
Yeah, I had a little something going on, man. What, by the way, what's up, Ugg? How you doing, bro?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
I think everybody liked this new nickname I gave you.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of steam. I've had a number, as you, I'm sure you can imagine, with my last name. I've had a number of nicknames over the years. I was Oogie, you know, growing up. Like when I was a kid, that was my dad and one of my classmates' dads were friends, and so that was his dad's nickname for my dad. So they kind of that went on, and then. But yeah, Ugg is a new one. That's for sure. That's for sure. Man, so you were on Clubhouse Live. What was that all about?
Yeah, they was on Clubhouse Live. I was on Clubhouse Live, man. They co-host Aaron Jones. You know, it's the bye week, so
right.
They had to get a fill in, and I answered the bell because you know it's a good time to get out there and see the fans and. Also promote our podcast show, my brother.
Yeah, and great news. If you're listening to this on the website or maybe if you're listening to it, and not that there's anything wrong with Stitcher or Spotify, but if you are listening to us on Stitcher or Spotify and you prefer to get your podcasts from Apple Podcasts, we are approved. We're good. We're good to go. You can subscribe. You can leave us a 5-star review. Gilbert and I would certainly appreciate that. You can leave us a verbal review. All those things, just so people kind of understand the way that the podcast analytics work. All those things, review, 5 stars, that's going to help us show up faster when people search Gilbert Brown, when people search for the Packers. We just want as many people, you know, to have a chance to listen to us and decide for themselves, you know, if they like what we're putting down or not. But the more we show up, the easier it is for people to find us. So that would certainly be our request to you, Packers fans. As far as getting in the news, very, very light, obviously, with the Packers not having to release any injury information with no game coming up and, seemingly getting out of the Carolina win. Healthy, at least certainly I don't remember anybody going off on a cart or anything like that, but the Packers are apparently a little bit annoyed or not satisfied with their run defense because they had three big old run stuffers in for workouts over the course of the last couple of days. I know Carl Davis was one of them. Carl is one of those 3-4 style defensive linemen in that.
I don't mean to cut you off.
Go ahead.
I know Carl Davis personally.
Okay.
My high school coach, Coach Robert Dozier, was a mentor to Carl Davis, is a mentor to Carl Davis. So I hung out and spent a lot of time with Carl Davis over the years. So I know him personally.
Is that somebody that, cause so it was Carl Davis, who was a 3rd-round pick by the Ravens in 15, David Perry, who was another, he's more, so Carl's like the big 3-4 defensive lineman, right? 6'5", long, 320 pounds.
Big old dude, man.
Yeah, and David Perry is one of the more squatty noses. Not necessarily that you were squatty because you're tall, but one of those like 6'1", 6'2", real wide noses. He was in for, and then Justin Ellis, and actually Justin Ellis got signed. I think he got signed by Baltimore, so he's not available anymore. What's your take on Carl Davis? Is he somebody that could come in and help the run defense a little bit?
You know, it's all about the scheme, though. You know what I'm saying? If you go out and get these big guys, where are you going to put them? You see what I'm saying? Where are you going to put them? You know,
hopefully next to Kenny Clark.
Yeah, you would think so, man. And but really, I mean, big guys like that, I mean, we have turned into like a, I hate to say it, like a pretty defense. You know, we don't got no big guys that can take on two or three guys and hold people up so the linebackers can flow type defense, man. We got up the field, fast type defenses. That's why I would say our defense is like angles. Now, if you're going to go out here and get these big guys, how are you going to use them? Are you going to go to a 4-3 sometime? I mean, stick it in the scheme a little bit. Let's see what happens, you know. But, you know, that to me, if you don't use them properly, why are you getting them?
Yeah, I can understand that. And I mentioned his name on this podcast before, but Ben Fennell did his personnel charting, and 64% of the time, the Packers had at least six defensive backs out on the field on Sunday. And granted, you know, they limited the Panthers to 16 points, and you know, I don't know, around about 400 yards of total offense, which is not necessarily a banner day, but there are certainly worse days in the National Football League. But you're not a fan of playing dime that often, I don't think.
No, man. I mean, from where I come from, we got to stop the run first, make them pass. Here, we hoping they, you know, we playing the pass first, and then when the run hits you in the mouth, you're in trouble. So that's, I'm not going to say anything wrong with what coach is doing, but it would be nice if he could throw in a 4-3, sprinkle it in a little bit, get four hogs up there, and let's beat you into submission and get the job done that way. So you got two or three linebackers back there flowing to the ball quickly. I mean, it's just like when Don Capers came in, we just went to like Pittsburgh North. With their defense, you know what I mean? Yep. And I'm just like, come on, man. We got to get back to our roots. We got to get back to what put us in the Super Bowl. You know what
I'm
saying?
That was something that Dom actually experimented with just a little bit one of those years with Julius Peppers, playing a little 4-3. He called it the quad package, but playing Clay a little more off the ball and playing Julius as a down lineman. I'm not sure they have a Julius or a Clay on the roster right now, but definitely a team that's, you know, doing a lot of sub work. And obviously the other piece of news is that, you know, it's the bye week and there won't be a Packers game, but we've got some interesting ideas and some stuff to keep the start of the Gilbert Brown podcast, the Packer Report podcast with Gilbert Brown, presented by Stadium View, going. We're going to keep it moving. We promise. I would say though, 20 carries for 108 yards with a long of only 18. Against a guy, and they basically don't give the MVP to anybody but quarterbacks anymore, but they're talking about maybe giving it to Christian McCaffrey. So against a guy of that magnitude, where he is having that level of a season, I would say that 108 yards on 20 carries and a long of 18, it's not half bad, right?
Anytime, I mean, the goal for a running back is to get over 100 yards. I mean, that's just like,
right. That's the benchmark. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so he got he got what he wanted to accomplish. Of course he wanted to get more yards, but our defense showed up against one of the elite running backs this year, which is Christian McCaffrey. So when you do something like that, cause let's just think if he had a banner day, he'd had 150, 175, but they slowed him
130, down. Like 130 and then 80 yards receiving.
Yeah. So they slowed him down, and I believe the defense did their job. It could have been better, should have been better, but at the end of the day, hey, as long as we won the game, who cares?
Yeah, and that's, I think, the main point. Like you said, I cover North Dakota State for 24/7 Sports, and one of their head coach, who used to be the defensive coordinator, one of his favorite things to say is that they don't get any extra points for all those yards. And I think that's something that's applicable here, though. You know, okay, Carolina had, 400 yards, and Kyle Allen threw for 307 of them. But do they get any bonus points more than the 16 that they put up on the scoreboard? Absolutely, they do not. And ultimately, I would say if you told me going into Sunday, hey, Ugg, they're going to score 16, I'd say, all right, Packers win. If you said the Panthers aren't getting more than 16 points, I would have told you 9 times out of 10, Green Bay is going to win the game. I thought that the Packers, one of the things that you and I both talked about were what was a constant when the Packers were winning games? What was something that was in common? Hot starts, right? We talked about the way they started against Dallas, the way they started against Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, the first touchdown went to the Panthers.
Right.
But then the Packers went on a 24-3 run. And I think that was a big deal to establish that they were the front runners and that they could run or pass, because Green Bay ran the hell out of the ball. They had 27 carries for 163 yards and 3 touchdowns. They set the pace on the ground. Mm-hmm. How big was that good start?
It was good, man. And, I'm always preaching about it starts up front, the O-line, D-line.
Yep.
And when you're watching this game, you can see the offensive line starting to click and starting to get this game going, starting to move the ball, starting to hear there. Defensive line, not giving up the big 50-yarder or the big 75-yard run. You know what I'm saying? So when you saw that and you saw the running backs by committee, toting that rock, trying to get as many yards as I can. But the thing about it is when you watch that game, they was fighting for those yards. Nobody was just falling looking for a pillow. They was trying to get the extra inch, the extra, because everybody knew how important this game was to win, to go into the bye week. And ain't nowhere in the world they was going to let Carolina come in here. And it's kind of like, you take that glove off and you walk up to that guy, you slap them in the mouth and say, I challenge you. That's what happened when they got that first touchdown. It was like, smack, okay, it's time to go, because we ain't about to go down this alley no more.
Yeah, and it was a massive, massive response. The guy I want to ask you, though, about is the quarterback, because I don't know what people expected from Kyle Allen. I saw a guy that I didn't think had a great arm. I saw a lot of kind of lollipop passes.
Right.
He completed plenty of them. He was 28 of 43, which is not a fantastic completion percentage, but it's not terrible either.
Right.
But I saw a guy shaking, free rushers, and Savage missed a sack, and Z missed a sack, and Kenny missed a sack, and that was not because they took bad angles. It's because he made a play in the backfield. I saw a really good athlete with maybe not the world's best arm, but number one, I saw a gamer. What did you see from Kyle Allen?
You know what, man? He got a lot of stuff on his, back, and stepping into that type of position, coming behind that type of a quarterback, it's hard, because you trying to live up to something and you trying to keep this where the game doesn't skip a beat. Everybody knows what Cam Newton can do. Everybody know how he play. Everybody know that he makes things happen. Well, Kyle Allen, he has to do the same thing or you're going to lose. It's just flat out. You're going to lose. And he's not the caliber of the player, but like you said, he's a gamer. He's going to give you what he can give you and try to give you more, but they didn't have enough for Lambeau Field, baby.
I know this isn't on the outline, just because this was kind of a panicky outline. But before we get to Jimmy Graham, I have to give you a second to talk about your boy, because immediately after the game, I texted you about Kenny Clark and how well big number 97 played, because he looked like a blue chipper on Sunday.
Man, you know what, man? It's a lot of guys. Like I said, I was liking Daniels, you know, but every now and then you'll look over there and you'll see Kenny Clark do this. You see Kenny Clark do that. And you see him, man, that joker is taking over the game. People don't understand how the game goes. If Kenny Clark don't flush that rabbit out of the hole for the Smith brothers, there is no sacks for the Smith brothers. People forget that. You know what I'm saying? Because the quarterback could just step up, let them two run past him, and complete the pass. Kenny Clark is coming up that middle with ferocious moves, and they can't stop him. You know what I'm saying?
Can you kind of – I don't mean to interrupt, but can you kind of give an appreciation or just kind of explain to the listeners just how difficult it is to grab a professional athlete, a 300-pound man, and walk him back into his quarterback play after play after play?
Yeah, I mean, I always tell people you can't be sitting on the couch eating potato chips talking about I can do that. I want to see you do that. Man, it is an exceptional skill to be able to get off the ball, use your hands, put pressure on a guy that's just as much as you or a little bit more than you for 2.5-3 hours. You understand what I'm saying? That takes skill, that takes power, that takes heart. And Kenny Clark got all that, man. And I'm just amazed that when I sit here and see him do the things he does, flushing out that rabbit, collapsing the pocket is what we're bred to do. We got to collapse the pocket, get the rabbit out the pocket so that the pretty boys can go eat. If it ain't for guys like Kenny Clark, there will be no 8-9 sacks for guys. And I'm pretty sure the Smith brothers will tell you the same thing, is that, hey, man, this guy's keeping that quarterback in there for us, and we go get him.
Is that what you called Reggie and Sean, the pretty boys?
Yeah. You got to call. I mean, come on, man. I mean, I'm on the defensive line where Reggie got 5,000 sacks, and Sean got 4,000, and Santana got 3,000. I get like 3 or 4 if I'm lucky. So, of course, I'm going to call them the pretty boys because, you know, the nose has always got to do the dirty work. Run, pass, whatever. The nose, the middle guy is all – because everybody's trying to attack the inside, get to the outside. So the nose guy got to be the strongest. He got to be the one that's unselfish. He got to be the one that does things nobody wants to do so the whole defense can be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. And one guy I want to ask you about a little bit here is Jimmy Graham. And Jimmy is, you know, a guy that – He's the highest cap number. I mean, he's the highest paid tight end in the league. I don't think it can be argued, you know, that he's not playing that way. He's not the top tight end in the league, but I think he's really starting to kind of find his role. And it's something that, you know, fans have been kind of rough on him because he did sign a $30 million deal, and there have been some we'll call it, I don't know if it's lack of effort, but certainly lack of success run blocking. But he's not a run blocker. I mean, that's not what, that's not why he went to the Pro Bowl. He didn't go to the Pro Bowl for, you know, burying defensive ends at the point of attack. That wasn't ever, anyway, that's kind of a rabbit hole in the way that he's used. Sure. But I think over the course of the last month, we've really seen Jimmy kind of come into his own. And is he running a 4-5-6 anymore? Probably not. You know, it didn't take those boys long to catch him when he was running down the seam, but you know, he made moves and he was strong and he was physical. And what have you seen from Jimmy, and how important is it? Cause like Rodgers talked about this, right? He said after the game, it doesn't always go like this. And certainly for the last 2 years, it hasn't. Being 8-2 is special. Being part of a good team doesn't just happen. You don't just roll out the ball and say we're the Green Bay Packers and we're going to the playoffs, even though for a time Rodgers made it feel like this. How important is it to have a guy like Jimmy as a veteran around a group of relatively young dudes?
Man, Jimmy Graham, have you ever seen him in person?
I have, yeah. You know, just locker room stuff.
Yeah, he is a large individual. I looked at him, man. I looked up. I said, God doubt that's a big joker. But to have somebody like that on your team, okay, people got to realize how important a tight end can be. If you go back to the 96 team when we had Mark Chimura and Keith Jackson, we was killing folks, the seams, the dump-offs, the this, that, the other. Sometimes, man, you can't – when you look at a guy like Jimmy Graham, you got to ask yourself, is our offense really letting him be the Jimmy Graham that he needs to be? We got so many weapons that sometimes you forget about the tight end until you really need them. You know what I'm saying? And as an offense that we are so used to, and that's why I always like to say going back to the basics. I don't mean going back to 96, but you gotta use every tool that you have and create things for those tools, because if you use Jimmy Graham in certain situations, he going to out-jump you, he going to outpower you, and he's going to get the extra yards that we need if we take advantage of all our tools. Sometimes we don't. Some games we'll leave half the tools on the shelf. And to his defense, yeah, he get paid a lot of money. He's a professional. He got to do his job. But we got to create ways to get him to be the professional that he is used to being.
I want to – so I was pretty outspoken with, you know, what I thought they should do at the end of the half. And I think LaFleur made the right call and called the wrong play. I didn't like inside zone. Bakhtiari obviously didn't quite make it into Gerald McCoy. Mm-hmm. And got his running back smacked in the face. But I just felt like if you go up at that point, it would have been 24-7. Mm-hmm. If you score a touchdown there and you, or maybe 21-7, I can't remember exactly what the score was in the situation, but the point of the matter is it would have been 21, and you have a chance to slam the door, even from the 1 yard line on fourth down. I want the coach. There's a saying that Coach LaFleur has right now: all breaks, no gas. And there's another word in there, but we're trying to keep the explicit tag off of this podcast. That was an all breaks, no, or excuse me, an all gas, no breaks call. You know, that if you want your head coach to believe that you can get a yard, where did you stand on that? Obviously the, result was bad. You know, the turnover on downs or halftime or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But would you have kicked the field goal or did you like the decision?
You know, I like the decision. I like that, you know, you're in Lambeau Field. Everybody's hyped. Everybody's this, everybody's that. But as a head coach, you have to know your team. You have to know in that situation, 4th and 1 on the goal line, are we a smash mouth team to put this ball in the end zone? No, we're not. We can block, we can pass block, we can do this, we can open up holes. But in that situation, everybody was on go. So you want the ball in your best player's hands, which is?
Number 12.
Thank you. So then if you're on the goal line, And everybody and their mama know you about to run this ball, put the ball in your best player's hands and create something. If not, then we're going to kick it. If you go up and down the field, yeah, we can move the ball and people got to understand the game. We can go out there and we can run. When it's inside the 1 yard line, you're going to get the best out of that defensive line. You're going to get the best out of that offensive line. And if we ain't a smash mouth team, because when I say smash mouth, I'm talking about you got some hogs up front, you got Jerome Bettis in the backfield. Oh, we're going to get that one. If we ain't got that, then we got to athletically get this touchdown. And like I said, I like the call, but we got to put it in the best player's hands and get the touchdown.
And that's really, I think, Gilbert, where you've nailed it is that Elgton Jenkins, the left guard, is one of the best young offensive linemen in football, but he's an athlete offensive lineman. He's a pass blocker. He is, he's smooth and athletic, as is Lindsley. Shoot, Billy Turner's really a tackle. You know, he's playing guard, but he's in there because he's got tackle feet and can pass block.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got play action.
We got pass blockers. We'll pass block your butt off. But when it comes down to rooting guys out of there, I mean, really, because our offensive scheme ain't smash mouth. It ain't hitting you in the mouth and drive you off the ball. We're going to pirouette you out the well. We're going to do this dance and get you out the way, or do this, that, and the other. You know, and when I'm saying like smash, I'm talking about like Nate Newton, Larry Allen coming downhill, hitting you in the mouth type things. You know what I'm saying? We're not right. Like, we're athletic.
Yeah, and yeah, Green Bay ran the hell out of the ball, 163 yards. They run the ball well, but a lot of that is spreading teams out and running against six-man boxes with offensive linemen that can move. And to, you know, call inside zone and try to go off left guard with no lead blocker against Gerald McCoy, that couldn't have been your best idea.
Headache City, baby, Headache City.
Yeah, and to coach's credit, he took full responsibility. He said after the game, he said, "I'd go for it again. I would not call that play." Boom. Yeah. That's all I needed to hear, because that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Aaron Jones, man. He's kind of a barometer for the team, I think, in that when you go and you look at the 8 games that they've won, who plays well? Aaron Jones. And then you look at the 2 games that they've lost, and who's kind of missing? Aaron Jones. Aaron Rodgers campaigned a little bit, and I think this is unrealistic. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I think it's unrealistic. He campaigned for Aaron to be mentioned in the MVP race. And I think that's unrealistic, but hey, second team all pro, honorable mention, all pro, Pro Bowl. That's the kind of year that number 33 is having. What do you like from Aaron Jones? And what are some of the things that he does that maybe would have given you a little bit of trouble back in the day?
Man, when you look at him, man, I mean, he's no Barry Sanders. He's no Barry Sanders, but he has the traits of being a great back. The way he carries himself on the field, the things that he do, the speed that he has, the power for such a little guy to move the crowd like he does. He is a Pro Bowl back. He is a Pro Bowl back because of the things he do out of the backfield as well. The passes that he catches, the blocks that he makes on certain protections. He is an all-around back. You know, I wish he was a little bit bigger. I wish he was a little bit bigger, but he's getting the job done with what the gifts God has given him.
Yeah.
And my hat's off to him, man, because he's a hell of a back.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what really gets me is his short area quickness, because he ran like a 4.5 or a 4.55 at the combine. Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about superstar tailbacks, like, you'd love to see guys running in the 4.3s or running in the 4.4s. Like, you know, we've been talking a lot about McCaffrey, and McCaffrey McCaffrey was a 4.48 guy. And not that there's a huge difference between 4.48 and 4.56, but you see Aaron's 40 time and you think, he's not a speed back, but he's got short area quickness, elite short area quickness.
That type of quickness, man, you can't gauge, you can't put a clock on that. And that's the thing with some of these backs, man, that short area and that quick twitch fiber stuff that they got, man. And then certain moves. Yeah. Only time you measure in a 4.5 or 4.3 is when they break out in the open and they're going down the field. I mean, but, you know, I've seen, like I go back to Jerome Bettis, man, that one of the biggest dudes in the world, but he had quick movement in small areas and then get outside and watch my speed go. So, hey, man, who cares about 4.3, 4.2, as long as you got that quickness inside to make those moves to get outside.
For sure. And the run that really got me was that fourth quarter run when they were trying to milk clock, and it was second and short because he had a real nice run on first down. And one of the offensive linemen whiffed. There was a defensive tackle in his face,
right,
2 yards deep in the end zone.
Right.
He stiff arms a guy who probably weighs 90 pounds more than he does, then uses his speed to beat everybody to the edge.
Mm-hmm.
But then has the presence of mind and football smarts to stop before he gets to the sideline and head upfield and make sure he gets tackled in bounds. I thought, man, that showed so many elite traits and things that make him an excellent back. And I was really impressed by that. I want to talk one more game theory thing with you before we kind of move on. And that is, I personally, 3 minutes, 22 seconds left in the game, fourth and three at the Carolina 38. You take a purposeful delay of game and you punt the ball to the Panthers. A first down, you get 3 yards, we're done. we're in the locker room, we're in the tub, you know, we're hitting the showers, it's over. I go for that 10 out of 10 times. Just so people understand, they punted the ball at 2 minutes 31 seconds. That's when the fair catch was made, 2 minutes 31 seconds. The Panthers took less than 30 seconds of game time to get it back to the 38, 35, 34, like where the ball was before. It took them less than 30 seconds to get back, and you didn't give your offense a chance to go out and win the game. Gilbert, where's your head at on a thing like that? Do you prefer that they punt the ball and try and pin them deep and just trust the defense?
Hey, man, we got to keep butts in seats. We got to make it exciting. Let's do what Coach did.
Just give everybody a heart attack.
Just give everybody. Do you know how many games I was in and it went down like that? And that right there, people got to understand. Yeah, it's not good for the fans, and it's not good for this, that, and the other. But that builds team character, team morale, because it ain't going to be tailor-made when it really goes down like that. You got to put your guys in certain situations. That's how we do it in practice. We in certain situations. Bam, here it is. Now you got to figure out what. Find a way to win. And to me, man, I wouldn't have changed that ending for nothing in the world, because that made that defense stick together, and they was gonna fight until the end. And against one of the premier running backs, they shut him down on the one. Go on, get on that plane, going back to Carolina. Ha ha.
And so let's talk about the goal line stand, because this is a big time Gilbert thing. This is something that we discuss.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the scheme, right? So
yes.
if you look at that pre-snap look, it's a bad look for the defense as far as running the ball. You've got a skinny pass rusher and Kyler Fackrell lined up over the left guard. You basically have one defensive lineman in there and Kenny, because I think Zadarius was probably playing three tech. They're in the perfect call, in my opinion. I thought that Carolina was in the perfect call. You're going to put the ball in the hands of your MVP against a light box, and frankly, against a team that has struggled to stop the run, and you're going to put your season in his hands.
Right.
What an unbelievable. We talked about Jimmy gets a lot of crap from fans. Kyler Fackrell has been a guy that has taken a lot of guff over the years, and some of it I think is maybe warranted just because of some of the softer run defensive efforts that he's given. But there was nothing soft about that. For him to take on a left guard, somebody that probably outweighs him by 70 pounds, and make that play with the game on the line, that was big time, man. Talk about that goal line stand.
Man, you know what, man? It's I've been in that situation so many times, and you know, on that end of the end zone, and you got all them fans behind you screaming their asses off. You feel like you just took Superman's suit and put it on, and you gonna give it to them, and you gonna give them everything you got. You on front and center, man, and for him to lead that charge, to get them offensive linemen in a stalemate. You know what I'm saying? We win. If they don't get 2 inches forward and we stop it, we win. And now it's time for the linebackers to come and get the praise or whatever they get. Even though the D lineman did all the hard work, here come the pretty linebacker to make the tackle. Doing his job on the goal line stands for everybody. It took all 11 with that guy leading the charge, all 11 to stop that play.
Yeah, for sure. You saw former Packer Greg Van Roten trying to pull the Matt Leinart and throw his guy in the end zone at the end there. I don't know why nobody calls that. You know, they tell you can't do that, and yet it doesn't seem like they ever call the offense.
They cheat for the offense. That's what they do.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess points sell tickets. I don't know what to tell you on that one. All right, time to pay a couple of bills here, and we want to thank, as always, our title sponsor, Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. Just an absolute must go if you are in Green Bay for a game. I don't care if you're, you know, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, if you're a Packers fan that is flying in for the game or whatever you're doing, you got to go check out the Stadium View Bar and Grill. It's a piece of Green Bay history, you know, it's been there for a number of years, but the renovation, I think, has really brought it to a new level. You talk about the outdoor space and the banquet hall and the second level now, the new kind of bar, the way that they have all those HD TVs set up and the ability to kind of switch into a dance floor and stuff. It's just it's not a place, I don't think, that it's really possible to have a bad time. And you had a good time there this weekend, didn't you, Gilbert?
Obviously, I did. Obviously, I did. We had myself, Santana Dotson, Amon Green. It is the premier place to go before you go to the game because of the atmosphere, the way the people treat you, the good food, the great fun. And plus, you get to see a couple legends walking around there, too.
Yeah, I've never had a bad time there. In fact, just full disclosure, guys, I went to Stadium View way before they helped us finance this show. I promise this is not a place that I wouldn't, you know, tell you to go to if I hadn't been there myself. You talk about legends. I'll never forget the first time I was in Stadium View Bar and Grill was the late aughts. So 08 or 09. I can't remember what year it was, but the first time I ever went in there, I wasn't in that bar for 10 minutes and Jerry Kramer walked right past me. it's a place where you're definitely going to find legends. You're also going to find a fantastic selection of beers on tap. You're going to find awesome, awesome food. And again, you know, we really appreciate them. We really appreciate Mayfield Sports Marketing and everybody that has kind of come together to give Gilbert and I this platform because we're having an absolute blast. All right, Gilbert. Bye week. Talk about how to stay out of trouble, how important that is, and if you have any particular bye week stories that you'd like to share with us, I think now would be the time.
Well, I think that everybody knows that I'm a mama's boy, so soon as or any chance I get, I'm running home to see mama, get that good cooking, get that just down home stuff from a really hard start of the season. You need a break. Your body needs a break. Your mind needs a break. You want to get away from football a little bit, even though it's still in the back of your mind. It's going to stay in the back of your mind because now you got the rest of the season to go. But it's good that whoever thought of a bye week to give us, thank you, Jesus. Thank you. I love you because we need that. Recharge your batteries, like we've been saying from the start of these shows, reset everything, and then let's go to work.
I want to ask you a little bit about what Aaron Rodgers said, because I think that it's really important, and I think it shows his level of leadership. What Aaron said was that you carry the G with you wherever you go. And there are some, you know, athletes that maybe they love mama too, but there have been some guys that have gotten into trouble on bye week. This is no mystery. This is no, you know, we're not breaking any news here.
Right.
But carrying the G with you and representing the organization and representing your teammates is, I think, just a phenomenal message to the younger guys that they understand that whether you're out to eat or you're in the club or you're at the beach or whatever you're doing, you're a Green Bay Packer.
Mm-hmm. You know, that is so true, man, because that sticks in your mind too. And that goes to the leadership of the team, the veteran leaders of the team that tell the young guys, hey, what y'all used to do, you can't do no more. You can't do that no more. You're a professional athlete now. Act like it. Do the things that you are meant to do. And you got to always keep in the back of your mind, the young youth is always looking at you and they're emulating you and they want to do you and they want to be you. And before you do something stupid, you ask yourself, is this what I want to put out to show these kids how a professional athlete's supposed to act? I'm not telling you to be no role model. Everybody can't be no role model. But keep it clean, have fun, get back safe, and let's whoop them 49ers.
Well said, Gilbert. And I want to thank you for your time. Thanks for coming on this week. I think people are really enjoying kind of what we're doing. And so like we mentioned at the top of the show, we are approved. We're on Apple Podcasts. We are on Spotify Podcasts. We are on Stitcher Podcasts. And you can always, always catch us at Packer Report. And Packer Report is something that, you know, we can always use your support that way as well. VIP membership ending today, 2 months for $1. Absolute phenomenal value. You're going to get my VIP analysis, Dusty's, Andy's. You're going to get, you know, real live locker room vids, you know, stuff that post game during the week. We are in Green Bay. I'm not always in Green Bay, but Andy is, and we've always got the Packers covered for you guys top to bottom. So become a VIP member of the Packer Report, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a, you know, it sounds like I'm asking you guys to do a lot, but really it does help us a ton. Leave us that 5-star review, write a review. We want as many people to enjoy this show because we enjoy making it so much. Thanks again to Mark Mayfield and Mayfield Sports Marketing. Thanks to Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. And guys, most importantly, Go Pack Go.